This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There have been troubling headlines coming out of Grand Rapids in recent months. A burst of violent crime, 9 homicides since early December, and all of the victims died of gunshot wounds. This week, the community leaders in Grand Rapids, including the Urban League and Network 180, are holding a series of meetings to inform the people of Grand Rapids about what can be done to curb the violence. And one of the steps may involve bringing in a remarkable program from the streets of Chicago called Cure Violence. That's where trained helpers who are wise to the ways of the streets serve as interrupters. They're right there to keep disagreements and fights from escalating into shootings and death. Joining me now is Reynard Ross. He's the director of Upward Bound for Grand Rapids Community College. And right now he's serving on a panel organized to address the increase in violence in Grand Rapids. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And joining me from Chicago, Kobe Williams, who has been working as a violence interrupter with Cure Violence. Welcome to Stateside, Kobe.
Thanks a lot.
Good to have you. Reynard, I'd like to start with you. Can you give us a sense, being right there on the ground in Grand Rapids, what has been going on, especially over the past couple of months?
I don't know if I can say it any other way than borderline madness. Just a lot of retaliatory violence. This town is relatively small, so the degrees of separation with some of these folks involved is, you know, no more than 1 or 2 degrees top. So when one thing happens, it's very easy to run across or find someone that's on the other side of the conflict. And some of the things we found, which makes Cure Violence, you know, attractive to us, is that a lot of this is really just occurring based off of often some misunderstandings, and things begin to snowball and escalate. And next thing you know, we have something that's occurring that could have been squashed with some intervention early on, or interrupting, if you would, early on. So just trying to get a handle on this, obviously.
And in fact, I saw a quote in one news story that one of the pastors in Grand Rapids put it so well. He said, "Our hearts are bleeding." And as you said to me, this is a smaller community, so this has just got to have an incredible impact.
Yes, it does. And that's sort of what, I mean, I have a sort of a personal history of being involved in some of this, but as far as violence reduction, I'm also a former police officer in Eastern Manistee, juvenile detention center here in town. And in my work with children through my role as director of Grand Rapids Community College Upper Bound, I just for years have been in direct contact with young people in Grand Rapids. And just too often, those involved on either side of the gun are young people that I've had a good relationship with in different capacities. And so personally, just been a little driven to feel like my generation has a bigger responsibility as opposed to shaking our head and talking about the problems. I'm just sort of committed to try to be more solution-oriented. I think we all understand the problems well enough, and it's time to try to address the problems, really. So I'm just trying to put my energies in that direction.
Kobe Williams, you are a violence interrupter with Cure Violence in Chicago. And as I understand it, the key to Cure Violence is to treat violence not like a moral failing or something you can arrest away, but like a disease?
Right. We look at violence as a disease that spread from one person to another. So what we do is we get out there in the community and build relationships on an everyday basis. Once we build relationships, get to know people, talk to the people in the community and all that, but we do a lot of listening more to the community and listen to the young men and the young ladies. So our whole approach is focus on reduce the shooting and killing it, but also help you change your thinking and mindset. One thing we don't do, we don't be judgmental. We don't go around telling people you shouldn't be in the gang, you shouldn't sell drugs, you shouldn't do this. We listen more to them and build that relationship. Once we're able to build that relationship to them, then we can go into their little world, you know, meeting them and hearing them, meeting them where they are. So it's so important to meet people where they are, and then we'll bring them into our little world and show them what we're doing now. But it's about building that relationship, not just rushing out there, you know, being judgmental and all that. It's about to get to know them, man.
And you are a violence interrupter. What does that mean? What do you do?
A violence interrupter is somebody, I'm like a firefighter. I was in the community. When something is erupting in the community, it's my job to put out the flame. It's my job to stop the shooting and killing. So that's what I do on a day-to-day basis out there. You know, mediating conflicts. When something is erupting in the community, it's my job to put out the flame. It's my job to make sure I squash things. It's my job to stop things on the front end. When I hear something going on, it's my job to get out there and stop it. When somebody gets shot or killed or something, it's my job to get out there to try to stop retaliation.
And that has to bring danger.
I mean, most of us, myself, I was part of the problem, and now I'm part of the solution. We come from these areas, most of the workers. We come from these communities and these neighborhoods on an everyday. This is what we grew up in. So, I mean, it can be dangerous, but we don't look at it as being dangerous. We look at it, you know, me, myself, I took so much out to communities, and I just want to get back to the community.
Because you're from that world.
Yes.
You know, I think you know, he raised a good point as far as the direct interventions and interrupting, I suppose. And, you know, I think one thing we're starting to understand here in Grand Rapids, and probably a lot of people are around the country, is that you have to approach this violence piece with sort of a two-pronged approach. Obviously, one is the immediate reduction of violence, sort of like the, you know, putting your finger in the dike, so to speak, to stop the flood.
Sure.
But two, you obviously have to deal with some of the causal issues, and that's where the science, I guess, comes in. Because in treating this like an illness or an infection, I mean, this is definitely a public health issue. So with any public health issue, you need to do things to change social and behavioral norms, you know, particularly for those who are most likely to spread the illness. And it's intriguing to us in this community, and we believe it has some merit, and hopefully can help us stem the tide here.
If you're just joining us, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty, speaking today with Raynard Ross, who is serving on a panel organized to address the huge increase in gun violence in Grand Rapids, and Kobe Williams. He's been working as a violence interrupter with Cure Violence in Chicago, and they're looking to bring in Cure Violence with violence interrupters to try to stop the cycle of violence in Grand Rapids. And Kobe, as you've been working in Chicago, can you actually measure a decrease in deaths from violence?
I mean, see, here in Chicago, Cure Violence, we only like work 15 to 20% of Chicago. When I was out there on an everyday basis, I was working in the Inglewood community on the south side of Chicago. I mean, I definitely see a change with some of these young people, because, like I said, you got to establish the relationship with them. If you think about changing their mindset and their thinking, you got to be out there on an everyday basis. You got to be in the community every day. You have to get to know them more. And when things are taking place in the community, they will call you. So I see a lot of people change because I do a lot of follow-up contacts with them, and how I could tell that they making a difference and making change in their thinking and all that, because I talk to them about, have you been involved in any more conflicts? Have you talked somebody down for shooting or want to kill somebody? Have you done any of that? So that's how I'd be trying to measure a lot of the workers. I mean, a lot of the participants and clients we're working with out there. Once I see that and see what they're doing now on an everyday basis, I see it's works.
What would it take to bring this program into Grand Rapids, Mr. Ross?
Like I said, the first thing, and I guess let me actually add to something, you know, the question you asked, Kobe. I've been doing a bit of a research, and I do know based off a Department of Justice study that the area that Kobe used to work had a 40% reduction in shootings, and actually the Department of Justice done through Northwestern University found that there was a 100% reduction in retaliation homicide. So apparently, you know, that's what's intrigued me is the data, and I guess to answer a question on what we need to do to bring that to Grand Rapids is obviously there's an economic component associated with this. I met with the National Director of Cure Violence, and just ballpark, we estimate roughly $250,000 a year for a three-year pilot. And so before we obviously get to that point of looking to identify funds or funders, it's important for us to first spend a day and a half in Chicago to really get the ins and outs of the model, and us deciding as a committee if we believe that Cure Violence is a part of the solution for us in Grand Rapids. It definitely can't hurt, and will very likely help if the city gets behind it. That will help us in our quest to acquire some of those funds through public and private avenues.
Raynard Ross of Grand Rapids, community leader, and Kobe Williams, violence interrupter for Cure Violence in Chicago. Thanks for talking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you, please. Thanks
a lot.
Take care.
From Grand Rapids now to Detroit, where a group from Washington, D.C. is hoping to get elementary, middle, and high school kids excited about playwriting. The group is called the Young Playwrights Theater, and the leaders of this program are launching a four-city tour starting in Detroit, reaching out to key education figures and spreading the Young Playwrights Theater curriculum to classrooms outside of Washington. Joining me now is the executive director of the Young Playwrights Theater, YPT for short, Bridget Pribnell-Moore, and we have the artistic director, Nicole Jost, as well. I'd like to start with you, Bridget. Why did you specifically look at Detroit for expanding Young Playwrights Theater?
Sure. So we were looking for cities that had school systems where the student population had similar demographics to the students that we work with in D.C. and where the schools and the students themselves were facing similar challenges. So in D.C., you know, we have students who struggle with low test scores. We have struggles with attendance and participation in class. And it does seem like the schools in Detroit are facing similar challenges. And we developed this model as a way to engage students more deeply in their learning, to teach literacy skills in a way that is fun, and to provide students with the critical thinking and creativity and confidence that they need to succeed in school and beyond. So Detroit seemed like a great first city to visit to explore the possibility of using this model with a different student population.
So Nicole, as artistic director of the of YPT, what work do you do with these students? And I know it's elementary on up through high school. What is it that you do with them?
Yeah, well, our largest program is our in-school program, and that's really kind of what we're focusing on with our book and with this tour. So the in-school program, it starts with a very simple question of just what is a play? And to explore that question with students, we hire professional actors. They come in and they perform a play that doesn't have an ending. And so the teaching artist then turns out to the students and says, well, how do you think this play should end? So students kind of think about it. And they articulate an idea, and then the actors play out the different endings. Well, that's the essence of playwriting. So that's just the first taste, and that's just a way for the teaching artist to say, look, you've already done this. You're creative. You're intelligent mm-hmm. students. You have the power to do this. And from there, they move through workshops on developing characters, on creating strong conflict and drama, and they do some writing in the classroom, so they have one-on-one attention with the teaching artist. And then finally, it culminates at every age level with readings of the students' plays that they've completed. And we bring professional actors back into the classroom, and they actually perform a selection from every single student's play. So all of our students get to see, you know, from page to stage.
And every time I've heard an interview or read an interview with a writer, whether it's a screenplay, whether it's writing for the theater, that they describe that amazing rush of hearing actors speaking your words. I'll tell you who I remember. Matthew Weiner, creator of Mad Men, said when he heard all of these people, Elizabeth Moss and John Hamm, speaking his words. So I would imagine that that thrill is just as great for a fifth grader.
Well, if not more. I mean, imagine having that experience, but being a student who up to that point did not believe that you had something valuable to say, that anybody was interested in listening to you, how empowering that would be. I mean, these are not professional artists who are doing this for their career. This is a first-time, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for these students and a life-changing one.
We're speaking with folks from the Young Playwrights Theater in Washington, D.C. We have the executive director, Bridget Pribnell-Moore, and the artistic director, Nicole Jost. And they're launching a four-city tour beginning in Detroit, wanting to bring this experience of the Young Playwrights Theater to particularly at-risk students, elementary, middle school, and high school. You've taken out of the thousands of plays that have been produced or have been written by students through the Young Playwrights Theater, you've put it into a book called Right to Dream. You've taken some of the cream of the crop and also a curricula. But before we talk about the curricula that's in the book, give us an idea of what some of the plays are about. Bridget, what are these children writing about?
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. So we work with elementary, middle, and high school mm-hmm. students. And so the topics that they write about really run the gamut. In elementary school, we have these really imaginative plays about superheroes, plays about talking animals, kind of different takes on fairy tales. And then in middle school, we have a lot of plays about students discovering themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, really learning who they are, answering that question. Who am I? How do I relate to my peers? What am I doing in school?
Yes.
And then in high school, they get grittier and they start looking at the world around them. We get a lot of social justice topics. It's just a different level. So the plays in the book, there are 30 plays and they span the past 17 years. So they're some of the best plays created by elementary, middle and high school students. And in the book, they are divided by age appropriateness. So mm-hmm. we have a section that is for all ages, a section that is appropriate for 13 and up, and then some of the grittier plays in 16 and up. So there is really something for anybody in this book.
And Nicole Jost, as the artistic director, talk to me about the depth of what these young writers are putting onto their onto paper.
Sure. Well, I'll talk about one of my favorite plays from art history, and one of my favorite plays in the book is a play called Society Unjust by Shannon Marshall. And Shannon was really interested in gentrification, which is a huge issue in D.C. It's a huge issue in our kind of home base neighborhood in Columbia Heights. The neighborhood has just experienced rapid change over the past few years. So Shannon wrote a play where there's an old woman and she's kind of dealing with the struggle of, not knowing whether she wants to sell her house to this developer who she knows is going to turn it into like a coffee shop or something and, mm-hmm. and change her neighborhood. And so she's struggling with that. You know, she doesn't know if she needs the money to maybe pay medical bills. And it's just, you know, she's caught in this struggle. And then I guess I won't give away the ending of the play, but Shannon actually is also a wonderful poet. So she closes the play with this beautiful poem and it's just incredible. I mean, it's one of the plays where when we produced it, as we do with professional artists in a professional theater, my father actually said to me, "I don't believe you. That play was not written by a high school student. You're trying to pull the wool over my eyes." I said, "No, Dad, that's Shannon Marshall. I'll introduce you." So, they take on themes like gentrification, gang violence, teen pregnancy. It's amazing.
Also, for teachers who might be listening to us or parents who would like their children to have the opportunity to learn to write and express themselves, you also have curricula.
Yes, the entire second half of the book are sample workshops that we actually use in the classroom to teach playwriting. Every workshop is tied to Common Core standards for English language arts at the elementary, middle, and high school level. So our dream is that this book will be used by classroom teachers around the country, that teachers will take our curriculum, will adapt it to teach to the Common Core standards that they're already required to teach to, in an engaging way. So the book is available nationally. It is on Amazon. I encourage anyone who is excited about using this model in the classroom or even in their home to check it out.
Wonderful work. Young Playwrights Theater, and we've been speaking with Bridget Pribno-Moore, who is the executive director and artistic director, Nicole Jost. Thank you so much for talking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.